I the Book of Mormons has become very important to me in my life. I have spent a lot of time as a student of the Book of Mormon and continue to study it and love it. I will remind you that we are committed to the Book of Mormon as an absolutely authentic ancient record. And I know that that's true. I know that the Book of Mormon is an authentic ancient record. I have an abiding testimony of that, and will always have a testimony of that. I'm going to talk about an aspect of the Book of Mormon today that is not essential. You don't need to know a thing about Book of Mormon geography in order to understand the saving principles in the Book of Mormon. Certainly, you don't need to know anything about the Book of Mormon's geography to receive a spiritual witness of its eternal truths. However, I do think there is a very practical aspect of learning something about Book of Mormon geography. And it has to do with how we learn, how we remember, and how we think of it, and how meaningful it is in our lives. If you have a spatial orientation, that is, if when you read the Book of Mormon, you can truly see where things are relative to one another, and if you have a good feeling for that, I think it enhances your ability to learn. You're going to hear me talk a lot, and you already have, talk about the necessity of forming what I would now call a sticky platform for yourself. Whenever you set about to learn a new concept, a new principle, I believe that you should establish for yourself a platform. You've heard me talk about it before, a solid base of understanding that you know absolutely, you've learned it, you've memorized it, it's part of you. And the reason we call it a sticky platform is that if this platform is well formed, in fact, it's well established, it is more fun to learn because everything you learn will just stick to that knowledge you already have, and your knowledge will grow rapidly, so rapidly that you could hardly believe it. So one of the reasons that I have an interest in, and the reason I'm presenting this to you today, is because I believe that it's a significant addition to your understanding of the Book of Mormon. Now, the real reason I'm presenting it today is that it's fun. And I think that this is a subject that is a little bit of a break from the usual doctrinal topics that we talk about. And I'm doing this on purpose for you, to give you a little bit of a break. And I hope that the things that we say will prove to be a little bit of a lighter topic for you. I hope it'll prove to be something that you will enjoy. That's Book of Mormon geography. Okay, now, the first question is, where would we go if we wanted to learn something about Book of Mormon geography? In other words, how would we actually begin a study of Book of Mormon geography? Well, the answer is that the text of the Book of Mormon itself contains significant, considerable, in fact, information about Book of Mormon geography if you're oriented to looking for it. And so the main source of information, as I will try to demonstrate to you today, is about Book of Mormon geography, is the Book of Mormon text itself. Now, let me hasten to add that far wiser heads than I, far smarter people than I, far more knowledgeable people than I about the Book of Mormon have applied themselves to that project of trying to figure out some things about Book of Mormon geography using the text of the Book of Mormon. And what I tell you today will mostly come from them. It won't be anything that I have done as original research, but it'll mostly come for other people that have a lot better background than I do in there. So that's what we'll be talking about. Okay. Now, before we get into this, I want to tell you that there are two kinds of Book of Mormon maps. When we talk about Book of Mormon geography, we would then talk about creating a map of the Book of Mormon lands. Now, there are two kinds of maps. The first type I would call a hypothetical map. Or it might also be called a, quote, relative, unquote, map. Now, what I mean by that is this. This is a map that it has no direct relationship to any actual specific location on the Earth. In other words, it is simply a map that is created hypothetically to show relative relationships of cities and rivers and mountains and bodies of water. In other words, it's not a map that's intended to be located in any specific place on the Earth. Okay, that's called a hypothetical map. And most of the time that we spend today, we'll be talking about the hypothetical map of the Book of Mormon. Now, there's another kind of a map, which I would call an actual or de facto map. And this kind of a map is produced as one takes a specific location on the Earth and places the Book of Mormon lands on that specific location. We would then create an actual map or a de facto map. Now, again, as I mentioned, we're going to start by talking about the hypothetical map. And that's where we'll spend most of our time. We're going to draw it on the board. But there are those in the church, good men, smart men, serious, sincere men, that have spent a lot of time trying to find the location where the Book of Mormon story may have taken place. And to be honest, they have made this collective group led by one man in particular by the name of John Sorensen has been able to marshal a very compelling case for placing the Book of Mormon story in a very specific location. However, he admits, and I will tell you, that whenever you try to do that, whenever you try to put the Book of Mormon story into a specific location, that involves some degree of speculation. And I heard him asked one time, would it ever be possible to prove the location of the Book of Mormon? And he said, absolutely not. There is no way to prove it. In other words, we will never be able to unearth a sign that says, welcome to Zarahemla, you know, or something like that. So that's never going to occur. So we're stuck with not being able to prove it. Now, on the other hand, there is not much speculation when we talk about hypothetical maps. Because there is some, but not very much, because we're taking the text of the Book of Mormon and simply talking about relative relationships of things one to another. Now, before we finish, by the way, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to hand you out a copy of the hypothetical map of the Book of Mormon that will be more detailed than I put on the board. So as we talk about this map, don't take any notes about what I draw on the board, because you'll get a better map of it before you leave. Okay? Now, in addition to that, before you leave, I will show you, I don't have copies to pass you out, but I will show you an absolute map. That is a map that, according to those people that have spent the most time with it, that are the most knowledgeable about it, I will show you where they feel the Book of Mormon story takes place, and I will show you a map of the main features of Book of Mormon lands placed onto this location. And we'll do that before you leave. Okay. All right. Any questions about that so far? By the way, as always, please feel free to ask questions. Let's keep it very, very informal. All right. Now, I don't have any blacks, unfortunately, marking, and I've got to get one, but I'm going to use this red, and I hope it's visible to all of you. Now, the Book of Mormon lands, first, at the most fundamental level, consists of two major lands. There's a land northward and a land southward. And between the two, there is something that is referred to in the Book of Mormon as a, quote, narrow neck of land. So I'm going to start by drawing the map this way. Okay, we have the land northward, the land southward, and the narrow net. Now, you'll notice that I have left these as, this is kind of an unfinished looking thing, isn't it? I've left these open. The reason I've done that on purpose, that is to remind you that this land area where the Book of Mormon story took place may have simply been part of a larger land area, that in fact, there may be continued land down here and continued land up here. In other words, this is not the end of anything. This is not an island that we're talking about here. So that's why I've left those open. Okay. Now, the land northward is divided into two lands. This is the land north and the narrow neck of land now. The first land is to the north and to the west, and it's called the land of Moron, and it's pronounced Moron, M-O-R-O-N. Okay, now, as you'll recognize that, that is a land that was named by the Jaredites, and that was their capital land. That was their main land. But it is in the land northward. It is on the north of that and to the west. Okay? Now, down toward the narrow neck, there's another division of this land northward down here, and it's called Desolation. Okay. All right. In the narrow neck of land, one passage in the Book of Mormon refers to a line, a quote line, that divides the land northward from the land southward. Now, presumably that line is a river, most likely. So we would expect to find a river flowing through at least part of that land, and that would be the line that marked the division between the two. Okay. Now, the land southward is also divided into two major lands. And I'm going to draw, actually, a border between the two, extending like this, and I'm come up just short of that west coast for a reason that I'll tell you in a minute. Okay, now, in the land southward, then, two major lands. That, on the south of that, we would call, this would be the land of Nephi. And in the north, we would have the land of Zarahemla. Now, each of those lands has its own capital city, okay, named, of course, after the land. So down here, we would find the city of Nephi here, and we would have the city of Zarahemla right here. All right, now let me put a couple of other features. In the land northward, it appears within a relatively short distance. We'll talk about distances in a minute here. We're not going to talk about distances yet. But within a relatively short distance of the narrow neck, probably on the west side near the coast, is a hilly area. And there was a hill there referred to by two names. In Jaredite times, it was called the hill Ramah, and in Nephite times, it was called the hill Cumorah. Okay, this area may be part of a hilly area, because there is another hill that's probably close to this, very close, called the hill Shim. Okay, north of that, up in this area, there is a land that is called the land of many waters, or Riplianton, is what it's referred to in Book of Mormon. And I'm just going to illustrate that by putting many waters. Those are waters. Those are lakes or ponds or swamps or whatever. So it's a very wet area. Okay.
It's all on the east side of the land.
On the east side. Did I say west? I meant east. Yeah, east side. And that's where the hill Cumorah is, and that's where the land of many waters is. This being west, north, south. So, okay. All right, now let's talk a little bit about the separation. Between the land of Nephi and the land of Zarahemla is a wilderness area. Now, understand what a wilderness. Intuitively, when we talk about wilderness, I have this tendency to think of desert. For some reason, a wilderness is a desert for me. It's hot. There's an occasional cactus, a lot of sand, and nothing else. You know, it's a wilderness area. But understand that the term wilderness doesn't necessarily mean a desert, an arid desert. The term wilderness simply means that it is, number one, inhospitable, that is not pleasant to live there, difficult to negotiate, and there aren't any people there. In other words, it's not settled area. So that's a wilderness area. Now, there is a wilderness that divides the land of Nephi from the land of Zarahemla. Now, we know a little bit about it, okay? Now, let me just tell you. First, it would appear that there's a tendency for that wilderness area to surround part of the land of Zarahemla, and probably narrower in the middle. And then on the west, it's a very substantial wilderness area that extends almost all the way up Zarahemla and forms a west wilderness, okay? And that is referred to in the Book of Mormon as Hermounts, Hermounts.
President,
it's the West Wilderness.
Are you going to give us the scripture references for these?
I have them. I wasn't going to give them. I if you would like to ask me after, I have them all here. They're written into my notes here.
Thanks.
Okay. And there are many things that refer to the wilderness area. Okay. Now, any questions so far? All right, now let me give you a couple of other features of the land. First, there is let's talk about the greater land of Zarahemla first. Let me tell you just a little bit more about it. On the north of Zarahemla, there is a land that appears to be, as it's described in the Book of Mormon, it appears to be a narrow land that extends along that narrow neck and south of the line. So it's in the land of Zarahemla, but it extends here. And that land is the land Bountiful. And there is a city of Bountiful that appears to be very near the east coast. We'll put it right there. And of course, there was a temple there. That's where the Savior made his appearance there. Okay. It is likely that the West Wilderness is mountainous, okay? But this is mountains. There's some evidence that there are carnivorous beasts, cats that live there, and because there were people that were attacked and killed, and so it's likely that it is a mountainous wilderness, okay? Now, there is a river. I think maybe I'll use this other color for the river just for fun. There is a river that appears, by the way, here's another thing. There is a suggestion that the land of Nephi is a high area, a highland area. That is, it's higher in altitude than the land of Zarahemla. Because, for example, as one goes from the land of Nephi to Zarahemla, one goes down to the land of Zarahemla. The sons of Mosiah went from Zarahemla up to the land of Nephi. And when we say up, remember, we're not talking about north like we talk about maps. We're talking about up in elevation. So there is a river that appears to originate in the wilderness area between Nephi and Zarahemla and then runs through the land of Zarahemla. Okay? I'm going to put that river right here like this. And then there's no really evidence of where it empties. There's no mention of the mouth. And so we're going to presume that it might actually duck back into the wilderness area and empty there. Okay. It originates actually, this is the river Siver. Okay. Now it originates very near a city right here in the Book of Mormon called Manti. All right. Now, the River Sidon, a couple of things we know about it. One of the things that's interesting is that on the other side of the river from Zarahemla is on the west bank of the river. On the other side, And how did you get to the other side, by the way? It appears that this river in spots was shallow enough to ford it, that is to walk across it, particularly at certain times of the year, I think. But it's not a deep, heavy flowing river in all parts. And so it's apparent that near the city of Zarahemla, often during the year, you could actually walk across it. Across the river and upriver slightly is an area right here, which I will, I'm just going to put it as a city. There's a little valley there. So apparently you got out of the river basin, up over a little mount, a little tiny ridge, and then down into another valley called the Valley of Gideon. Okay. And this, there was a city there called Gideon. And you'll remember that that's where Alma gave his great sermon to the people of Gideon about the teaching that the Lord died just so that he would learn how to succor his people. Remember, in Alma says. Okay. All right. Now, a couple of other things that are fun features of the land. First, where did everybody land? That is, where did everybody disembark? Where did they get off the boats when they came? Okay. What? Okay. Well, that we know that the Lehites, that is Lehi and his family, landed on the west coast, like you say. They appear to have landed most likely quite south, right about here. And this would be the, I'll just put Lehi. That's Lehi and his family. Okay. They landed, and we call that the land of Ishmael. We call it the land of their first inheritance, or the land of the father's first inheritance. They lived here for some time before Laman and Lemuel combined with some other people and chased out Nephi and his people. And then they went up into the mountains from the sea level area, and they ended up in a city which they named the city of Nephi, and lived for some 370 years there. So, please.
You said like maybe let me up right jump some other people and add up Nephi. So yeah. Nephi that. It's a bit like there are people there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did you think this was a pristine land where nobody was there before they got there? See, let me just tell you something that's interesting.
No.
Well, no. Oh, yes, you did. Let me tell you something. I'm going to talk about this again in a minute. Right? But one of the things that we all do, and you went through the same experience exactly that I did, when we read the book, we apply intuitively certain things to it. And I'll refer to another very common one that I'll bet you're guilty of, too. Oh, I'll bet you are. But see, we do have a tendency to feel that most likely, intuitively, here was a land that man had never set foot on, okay? And that in 600 BC, here came the Lehi and his family, and there was nobody here except maybe some Ulekites somewhere, but there was nobody in the land, you see. Well, again, let's not go into this heavily, but a careful study of the Book of Mormon suggests that if you take the number of years they were there, how big the population seemed to be, suggests that probably there was an indigenous people that existed there. They probably were a people that would quickly become subject to a more sophisticated people that landed with Lehi and his family. And that may have, for example, become the mechanism by which they became a dark-skinned people. And they quickly became far, far more numerous than the Nephite peoples, the Lamanites did. So is it possible, for example, that Laman and Lemuel formed an alliance with some other people? It's possible, you bet. And in fact, it's likely.
So they're all fair skins with Lehi. Tell people they wouldn't have been fair skin.
No, if they lived there, they're probably darker skin. It's a more subtropical area, most likely. Okay, I don't want to explode any of your myths, so. That's probably the only intuitive thing you had about the Book of Mormon that was incorrect, though. But everything else you believe about it's correct. What it do? Okay. Well, I don't want to preach hard doctrine here because a lot of these things we don't know absolutely. But that's life. Okay. Now, that's the land of the first inheritance. Okay. Now, also, let me also say an interesting thing. I have drawn this area here as what's called a coastal plain. A coastal plain is a sea level area that extends, and it appears that there may have been a sea level area before the mountainous wilderness, okay? We call that a coastal plain. Just keep that in mind because I'm going to refer to that again in a few minutes. Okay, now, where did everybody else land? The Jaredites. Where did they land?
Northeast.
West. Jaredites up here. Now, the Jaredites landed up here, most likely. And by the way, the land of Moron is around that area. You know, that's where they lived largely. And then they came down into this land of desolation. We know that the land of desolation is where the great final battles were fought, both of the Jaredite and the Nephite nations, right? So it was likely an area strewn with bones and weapons and so on, unless they had a cleanup crew. But now, another group came, and they arrived about the same time as Lehi and his family. And they were what we call them by a name that isn't even mentioned in the Book of Mormon. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. The name Mulekite is not even contained and not even found in the Book of Mormon. These were the people of Zarahemla. But we call them the Mulekites because we feel that one person that came with them was the son of the king, Zedekiah, named Mulek. And they likely landed on over here, right there, Mulekites. And there is a city, interestingly, there is a city on the east coast in the land of Zarahemla by the name of Mulek. Isn't that interesting? See? And that's where that is. Yes, please.
When did the Mulekites settle over?
About the same time as the Lehites. Mm-hmm. Came across the other ocean, though. Did you have an intuitive feeling that was different? No, I didn't. Well, this is the Pacific. We're talking about the Western Hemisphere. So this would be the Pacific Ocean. This would be either the Atlantic Ocean or the Gulf of Mexico, depending on where the story occurred. Okay. Okay, now, just to tell you, let me tell you something about these people of Zarahemla. Where do we first encounter the people of Zarahemla? Who first found them? Elder Mills?
First person period on all night.
Right. And what how were they encountered? Let me tell you, a king of the Nephites, the last king of the Nephites in the land of Nephi, was named Mosiah. Okay? This is the father of Benjamin now, not the son of Benjamin. Okay. So that was Mosiah. He led the people because there were too many Lamanites. They were too threatening. So they said, we've got to get out of here to preserve ourselves. So they left the land of Nephi, came down and came upon this area here, and they found a people already there called the people of Zarahemla. By the way, this was about 210 BC. This was about 380 years since Lehi had landed here. About 380 years since they had landed here, too. The feeling generally is that the people of Zarahemla were people that had landed here, they established here, and that one group of them had wandered up the river Sidon and had established themselves, led by a man named Zarahemla, and had established themselves there. And that ended up getting called the city of Zarahemla. Okay. Now, any other cities that I need to mention? I'll put one more city here, right there. And that's the city of Helam. This is Zarahemla here. This is Gideon. This is Manti. You can't see that from back there, I know, but
there's some suggestion that Mulek, when he left his father, must have been some small child.
He may have well been a child. Yeah. We don't know much about that, obviously, but yeah, he may well have been chill. Okay. The only other area that I'll mention is a land, and I'm going to mention it because I'm going to talk about it in a minute. There's a land called the land of Jershon, which is right here. Jershon. All right. Now, let me do this. At this point, let me distribute to you these hypothetical maps that I have. Sure. By the way, I have two changes. I have two changes in this map that I want you to make just as soon as you get it. There are two errors in it. And you'll find that this map will contain more than we have on the board, actually.
I'll do that. Okay. Can you please? Thank you. Isaac? Oh, is it cold? Iron.
There be it's on your bike while
but Eller Gill, you could step into that little room right behind there on this side. Just open the door, turn on the light, and there's a little gray box. And see if you could hit the off button and see if it'll go off. I don't know. It's best around those buttons. Nothing you're halfing up here. I don't know. Okay, now, two changes. Let me just borrow Eller Lindor's map. Two changes I'd like you to make. First change is this. I want you to change to take the M out of the land of Morin. Just cross the M out. It's M-O-R-O-N, not M-O-R-M-O-N. Okay. And then will you also take this the name Zarahemla down here along the Sidon River, and right under the final A, will you color in just a little dot that's the size of a city? That will be the city of Zarahemla. I forgot to put a dot there. So that's Zarahemla. You see, right under the final A, that's the city of Zarahemla. And then just take the M out of Morning, and then you get. Okay. Now let's just the next subject for just a minute here is. How large are the Book of Mormon lands? Now, intuitively, let me tell you something about Elder Brundage. When he first read the book, boy, did he get some stranger talk. I'm just kidding. When I first read the book, I had the feeling, I was 12 years old or so, probably. When I first read the book, I had the feeling that the land northward was North America. The land southward was South America, and the narrow neck of land was Central America, and that was the intuitive feeling I had. In fact, I carried that intuitive feeling till fairly late in life. But the question is, are the Book of Mormon lands really that large? In other words, how large are the Book of Mormon lands? Is this hypothetical map, can we make this North America, this Central America, and this South America? Or is it really that large? And so that's what we need to determine right now. Now, it is possible to go to the text of the Book of Mormon and draw some very useful information on this point. Now, let me give you one thing, and this is not a great way to do it, but just to get us started here. One of the things we know that the sons of Mosiah, remember, they went on a mission, lasted 14 years. They went up to the city, they went up to the land of Nephi. Taught it to preach among the Lamanites. By the way, it should be intuitively obvious to you that when the Nephites left the city of Nephi about 210 BC, when Mosiah led them up, for the rest of the Book of Mormon story, this land then became Lamanite territory. It was no longer Nephite land, even though it was the land of Nephi. The Lamanites moved in, and Lamanites controlled this whole area as soon as Mosiah left, and they controlled it for the rest of the book, basically. Okay. Now, at one time, the sons of Mosiah left the city of Zarahemla and to travel up to the land of Nephi, where they were going to go on their mission. Now, what we know about that trip is two things. Number one, we know that they didn't know where they were going. They said they knew not the course they should travel in the wilderness to go up to the land of Nephi, Lehi Nephi. By the way, the name Lehi Nephi is the same as the land of Nephi. Okay, you read later in the book, you'll read the name Lehi Nephi, and that is the same as the land of Nephi. Lehi Nephi, land of Nephi are all the same thing. Okay, they didn't know how to get there, and it also we find out from the Book of Mormon, the trip took them 40 days. 40 days. Now, unfortunately, we can't conclude very much. You say, well, how far do you go in a day? We can't conclude very much because we can imagine since they didn't know where they were going, they may have done a lot of wandering around. So that as it turns out, that's not terribly helpful. Another story, though, that is more helpful is the account of Alma And Nephi, the Nephites left the city of Nephi about 210 BC when Mosiah led them up. For the rest of the Book of Mormon story, this land then became Lamanite territory. It was no longer Nephite land, even though it was the land of Nephites. The Lamanites moved in, and Lamanites controlled this whole area as soon as Mosiah left, and they controlled it for the rest of the book, basically. Okay. Now, at one time, the sons of Mosiah left the city of Zarahemla and to travel up to the land of Nephi, where they were going to go on their mission. Now, what we know about that trip is two things. Number one, we know that they didn't know where they were going. It said they knew not the course they should travel in the wilderness to go up to the land of Nephi, Lehi Nephi. By the way, the name Lehi Nephi is the same as the land of Nephi. Okay. You read later in the book, you'll read the name Lehi Nephi, and that is the same as the land of Nephi. Lehi Nephi, land of Nephi are all the same thing. Okay. They didn't know how to get there. And it also, we find out from the Book of Mormon, the trip took them 40 days. Now, unfortunately, we can't conclude very much. You say, well, how far do you go in a day? We can't conclude very much because we can imagine, since they didn't know where they were going, they may have done a lot of wandering around. So that as it turns out, that's not terribly helpful. Another story, though, that is more helpful is the account of Alma, the older Alma. Now, where do we first encounter him?
No.
Okay, well, what was he doing when we first encountered him?
Priest.
He was a priest of King Noah. Okay, that's the senior Alma, exactly. Now, he was converted in, by the way, where was he living when he was converted?
Land of Nephi.
He was up in the land of Nephi. How did they get back up there? I thought they went down to Zarahem.
That's all it took.
Well, there was a man, remember, that when he got down here, see, there's the Mosiah led the people down here. And there was one man by the name of Zenith who said, oh, it's hot down there. Hate it. It's cooler up there. Anybody want to go back? Some did. So he took a group. I'm just kidding about the hot cooler, although it's very possible. We know that this is a highland area and maybe much more moderate in its climate. This was a lowland subtropical area, so it was probably pretty warm down there in Cuba. Okay, anyway, Zenith came up, and you remember for 80 years, the Zenithites, or the people that descended from him, King Noah was his son, then Limhi, they lived for 80 years back up here. Again, surrounded by Lamanites because, and this, by the way, they came back up only about 10 years after. They came up about 200 BC, so only about 10 years after Mosiah led them down. Okay. But anyway, we encounter Alma, who's a Nephite, who is a priest of King Noah, and he's converted by the prophet Abinadi. Okay. Now, after his conversion, he was a most unpopular, unsavory character. In fact, the people that followed him that were persuaded to believe Abinadi also, in addition to him, they were in some degree of danger. So they departed out of the land of Nephi and went to a place called the Waters of Mormon. Okay. I'm going to put, you see where the Waters of Mormon are. You just look on your map then. Okay. Now, by the way, the text suggests, if you look carefully at the text, the suggestion is that the Waters of Mormon were probably no more than a 2 or 3 day trip out of the land of Nephi, quite close. Okay. Now, in Mormon, of course, Alma baptized in the Waters of Mormon. They were near the Forest of Mormon. They were finally eventually forced out of this area, and they traveled first to the land of Helam. By the way, let's keep track, if you will. Keep score on just a little blank piece of paper. Don't write on your map, but on a blank piece of paper, keep track of how many days this trip is. First, from Zarahemla to the Waters of Mormon, let's say 2 or 3 days. Okay. I'm sorry. From the city of Nephi to the Waters of Mormon, 2 or 3 days. So we're trying to decide now how far it is from the city of Nephi to the city of Zarahemla. We're trying to say, what is this distance? Because if we know what this distance is, then we can sort of surmise some other distances, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. So we're trying to figure out this distance. Now, okay. Now, so that's 2 or 3 days. Then they were forced out of the land, the waters of Mormon, and they moved to an establishment which they called Gila. And we happen to know exactly how many days that took them. Okay, that was a trip of 8 days. After living in Helam for a time, they were again forced out of that area, and they traveled then all the way back to Zarahemla. The trip back to Zarahemla from Helam took 13 days. Now, we know that they were on foot, that they were traveling with children and flocks, with animals. So how far does one go in a day, traveling under those circumstances?
10 miles.
Okay, it's fast. Well, yeah, and the pioneers may have traveled a little faster even, but they had flocks. So let's say 10 miles. So again, that's the assumption that's been made. Now, how many days is this, by the way, the trip from the city of Nephi to Zarahemla? 13 from Helam to Zarahemla.
About 24 days.
25 days. So how far is this distance? We will say then that they traveled roughly 250 miles. Now, knowing that they were traveling in wilderness area, the people that are smarter than I am have said, well, they probably traveled about 250 miles. But if you were to take a map and do it as the crow flies, it probably would be more like 180 miles. In other words, if you could take the absolute distance, you know, they don't go in a straight line. They were in a wilderness area. So they have suggested that the distance absolutely between here and here is probably more like 180 miles. Now, let me shorten this discussion by saying that using the text and using very careful analysis, they have also surmised that the distance from Zarahemla to the narrow neck of land is about the same, about another 180 miles. So now we've got a land area that the whole distance of the land from the land of Nephi, which is the southernmost reach of the Book of Mormon lands, to the narrow neck of land, which involves almost all of the Book of Mormon story, except for the Jaredites and a little bit at the end, that land is probably no more than about 360 miles from north to south. Okay. Now, let me tell you another interesting story that has a bearing on that. And you've all heard this story, but let me just... Now I'm hot. Is anybody else hot?
Yeah.
Eller Johnson? I'm sorry. Whatever you did, we redo it. We undo it.
So thanks, just to say.
Well, you can... It's really warm, I think, even if you took out the clothes. Aren't you warm?
Well, I bet.
Okay, well, we'll see. Let it go that way for a minute. Okay, now, let me tell you one other story, just quickly, that has a bearing on this. The story has to do with that group of people that moved back up to the land of Nephi. Zenith, Noah, Limhi. Those were the three sons. You know, those are the sons. Okay, this group we call the Zenophites, or whatever you want to call them. But there came a time, about 120 BC, where they were living in the city of Nephi. They became miserable. They had been lorded over by the Lamanites. They had been taxed heavily. They had been abused. They had been very limited in their human rights. They were really held captive there. They wanted to get out. And so one night, I'm extrapolating a little bit here. One night they had a meeting, and they said, and Limhi was there, and everybody was there, and they said, we've got to get out of here. And somebody said, where should we go? And one person suggested, well, let's go back to Zarahemla. And they all agreed they'd go back to Zarahemla. Then somebody in the meeting raised their hand and said, there's a problem. We don't know the way to Zarahemla. It had been 80 years since they came up, and we have no maps. We have there's nobody that we know that can find Zarahemla again. Where is Zarahemla? We're going to go there. We better know where it is. So what they decided to do at this meeting, and I'm kidding about the meeting, obviously, but King Limhi then dispatched an exploring party, a group of men, and their charge, they're now in the city of Nephi, their charge was to go across the wilderness area, find Zarahemla, and then come back and get us. That's their charge. Okay. So what they did was this. They left the land of Nephi, and they wandered up here, and they missed Zarahemla. They went right on by it. And instead, they wandered up farther north, and they actually crossed the narrow neck of land and came to the land Desolation. And when they got there, they found all these bones, these evidence of a lot of destruction of people. And they found this set of plates, by the way, and they didn't know what they were, but they took them with them, 24 plates. And then they went back, and they were able to find their way back to the city of Nephi. And when they got back to the city of Nephi, you know the story from there, they said, well, King Limhi, we've got good news and we've got bad news. The good news is we found Zarahemla. The bad news is that everybody there is dead. So they were still in a pickle, obviously. And that exploring party didn't help. But what they had done, and the reason that story is important is, are we talking about North America, Central America, South America here? We're not. We're talking about a very limited area of land. And again, by similar extrapolations, let me just tell you another group of things. The distance between the narrow neck and the hill Cabora is thought to be around 100 miles. The whole land here is thought to be 360 from north to south up to the narrow neck. The distance across the land is thought to be in the area of 200 miles.
How many?
200. Kilometers, just double that. It would be about 200 miles would be about 400, a little less than,
Okay, so it's double.
Yeah, so 360 miles would be about 700 kilometers.
I mean, did you say it was from Desolation to the Narrow Neck of Land?
No, from the Narrow Neck to the hill Cabora is about 100 miles.
That's the press.
Here's Zeller Bridge again.
I love your singing.
I'm glad you did, actually. You're a good straight man. Isn't the Hill Cabora in Western New York?
Are there two Hill Caboras?
Yeah. Likely there are two Hill Caboras. In other words, it's unlikely that the hill that the early saints named Cabora after the Book of Mormon, on which the plates were found, it's unlikely that that hill is the hill that's Hill Cabora in the Book of Mormon. Okay. In the first place, remember on the Hill Cabora in the Book of Mormon, a group of surviving Nephites fled up onto the hill to hide from the Lamanites that were surrounding them and pursuing them. Now, let me ask you, has anybody here been to the Hill Cabora in Western New York? Okay. Now, okay, you've got a group of 500 Lamanites after you, okay? Where are you going to hide on that hill?
It's a little small.
Good luck.
We'll have trees.
Okay. No, that hill, in many, many ways, is not the hill, the Hill Cabora. So that's another hill. So we're talking about the Hill Cabora in the Book of Mormon, that's in Book of Mormon lands, and that's not the hill in Western New York. Okay.
Brother, do you have any evidence to show where the Hill Cabora or where Moroni was when he buried the place? Context with this
place. Well, let me just remind you that we know that his father, Mormon, buried the plates in a hill called Cabora. And he buried all the plates in the hill called Cabora. That would have been the large plates of Nephi, which may have been many, many sets of plates. That had been a record that had accumulated for 1,000 years, you see. So maybe many sets of plates. He gave to his son Moroni 2 sets of plates. Here's a question. Test question. What 2 sets of plates did he give to his son Moroni that Moroni then took possession of and kept?
Small plates
of Nephi and the plates of Mormon. Well done. Okay, very good. Okay, so he gave him those 2 sets of plates out of the many plates that would have been gone by the name of large plates of Nephi. Okay, so now, but we don't have any idea what Moroni did after that. Now, how did the plates get to New York? If this, let's say that this story took place in Central America, which is probably where it occurred. But let's say it occurred in Central America. How did they get to New York?
It wasn't funny.
Is it possible that he'd have ever been able to carry him up there? See, we have no record of him burying him, do we? We have no record in the Book of Mormon as ever burying the plates. We have no record of where he was. John Sorensen's reported a shipwrecked sailor named David Ingram, that he was shipwrecked on the Gulf of Mexico in Mexico near Tampico, Mexico, which is about, well, I'm not sure where it is on the map. But he ended up it being found some 11 months later in Ontario, Canada, which is up north of New York. So, and would have followed a route very similar to what Moroni might have followed if Moroni carried them out there. Could the Lord have transported them? I suppose. Could Moroni have carried them out there and finally buried them up there in New York? I suppose. Is it? We don't know. Good question.
Wait a second. I got a question.
Okay.
Yes. What's it?
You don't share the same biases that Elder Brundage shared.
Probably a little bit stupid on there, but
no, there's no
stupid.
But this story, I maybe who knows what kind of story this was. That Joseph Smith and someone else, they were showing a room in the Kokomora. There were lots of other plates and slava blame.
It's apocryphal. Yeah, don't take it too serious. We don't know if that ever really happened. But if you're talking about that Hill Cumorah, it's unlike.
What was it, the trophy? These two great final battles to desolation? Eudonis and the significant back desolation that made both battles end up there.
No, I think it just was a sort of more of a happenstance. I just think it was more of a serendipitous stand. That's just where they happen to be. But by the way, just here's another little connection that just occurred to me. The last two surviving generals that fought in the Battle of the Jaredites, do you remember who they were? Shiz and Coriantumr. Who survived the battle? Coriantumr. Who found him? Right. He was right about here, you see, when he survived the battle, and he was found by the people of Zarahemla. You see, because they settled in here, and he ended up wandering down, and they found it. You see, so that's another little connection. That's okay. All right. So we're dealing then with a limited land. We're dealing with a land that probably is maybe from here to here is probably 700 miles, and from here to here is something like 200 miles. And the narrow neck is somewhat shorter. Okay? Narrower. Okay. Now, one other little mention, then let's move on here and conclude. And I'll show you this other map, by the way. People often say, well, uh-oh, we got a problem, President. There's one thing you have not thought of, and it's going to change everything. And that is that at the time of the Savior's crucifixion, there was a great catastrophe that beset Book of Mormon lands. Remember, there were great earthquakes, great tempests, great storms. And in fact, there's one place that it says it changed the face of the land. And so, you know, you can say what you want, President, about the current land down there, but it may be so different that you wouldn't even recognize it. Well, so that has always been said, wait a minute, there's no sense even considering what area now that exists today might have been Book of Mormon lands, because it may have been very different back then. Okay, now, let me suggest to you that even though there was some considerable destruction, it is not likely that any major topographical changes were made to the land. Let me give you a couple of evidences. One evidence is that Mormon and Moroni, who wrote, of course, way after they wrote 300 to 400, AD, they didn't have any trouble at all recognizing the side of the lands that they were talking about. That were mentioned before the Savior's advent. In addition, the earth sciences have shown no evidence at all of any major upheaval where an ocean changes and moves in. I think there were some cities sunk, there were some changes made, but there was no major land changes. Now, for example, after the destruction, there was still land bountiful, still the temple was still standing, the river Sidon was still there, still probably ran the same course. In other words, while there was considerable destruction, it wasn't so devastating that it changed the whole topography of the land. Okay, now, any questions on the hypothetical map? Now, the next part I want to go over briefly because it's not terribly important. It's not important to your salvation. I don't even want you to take an interest in it. To me, it's fascinating, but I don't want you to take an interest in it. In fact, I command you not take an interest in it. Well, let me just show you this actual map just for fun now. Now, by the way, before you leave, you won't be able to see it from where you're sitting, but before you leave, why don't you come up and take a look at it? Let me just point out some of the features. So, let me get out of the way. Okay. You'll see right here and here. I had no idea where I'm going.
What are you going to get? To the top.
Okay. This area, by the way, is the area where Dr. John Sorensen and his people think that the Book of Mormon story may have taken place. By the way, just to tell you, this John Sorensen, to know him is to increase his credibility. He is the most brutal, the most undiplomatic scientist I've ever heard. If he is so impatient with shoddy science that he just slaps it aside. I heard one time an institute instructor ask him the question. He said, I was there. They said, Dr. Sorensen, how sure are you that the Book of Mormon story took place here? He said, I'm not sure at all. All I know is it's the only place in the Western Hemisphere where it could have occurred. That's not sure. Okay, but anyway, this is his formulation. This is the Gulf of Mexico. This is the Yucatan Peninsula. That extends up here. This is an area, if I draw a land right here, if I draw a border right here, this is the border between Mexico. This is southern Mexico here. This is all Mexico. This is Guatemala here. And the border between Guatemala and Mexico is right about here. This little area here is that would be the narrow neck of land called the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. And that's just... This is the land, the thought he thinks is land desolation. The Jaredites would have landed over here. The land of many waters, Ripley Ancum, a hilly area here, probably the hill Camorra called Cerro Vigía. Let's see, Cerro, what's hill in Spanish? Cerro. So Cerro Vigía, Vigía is of a view, or what is Vigía? You've never heard of that. Maybe it's just the names. Sorry. But anyway, there's a hill over here that he thinks maybe... fits pretty well with Camorra. There's a line that separates the land northward from the land southward called the Coatzacoalcos River. By the way, there's a couple of other things that might be mentioned while we're talking about the actual map, just to give you the general lay of the land. Lehite Landing down here, Ulakite Landing up here, Land of First Inheritance would be here, Land of Nephi, Waters of Mormon, Helam. Then you go down out of the mountains into the river valley. This river here is called the Grijalva River, probably the River Sidon, Zarahemla here. By the way, the West Wilderness. Let me just tell you a couple of interesting stories, just to kind of correlate with this map, just a couple of interesting little anecdotes. One of them is that if you'll notice carefully here, the city of Zarahemla is here, city of the land of the Nephi, the land of Nephi is here where the Lamanites live. By the way, there are three ways you could get from the land of Nephi. Look on your map, by the way, back on this. There are three ways to get from Nephi to Zarahemla. There were three ways that people knew. The first one, a most common way, is they came down to the river, ended up going down the east side of the river through Gideon, over the little hill into the river valley and across the river to Zarahemla. That's the most common. The one that was used one time by a group of attacking Lamanites was that they came down, instead of going on the east side of the river, they surprised everybody by coming down the west side of the river. And that was when the Nephites were out here chasing the group of Amlicites, do you remember? And they said, uh-oh, we see this, the Amlicites have joined up with this group of Lamanites, they're marching down this side of the river. So they hurried back to Zarahemla, and in the middle of the river, they had ended up engaging them in battles. So they crossed the river and engaged with them. So that was the other way. Now, there was one other group way up there, and that was to come down to the coast and go along the coastal plain. Now, the problem with that is if you came down that way, there were only two ways to get through into the lab of Zarahemla. One was way up here. There was a pass. I can show it better on this if you look. They would come down along the coastal plain, and then there's a pass that went in right in here. Now, there was also a way, this doesn't illustrate it here, but there was a way that they could, there was a pass that they could go in down here on the south. But the easiest way was to come up all the way to the north and go across in this way. Now, let me just tell you an interesting story that correlates with this. By the way, there's a city right there just inside this pass called Ammonihah. Okay, now, let me tell you an interesting story. Sons of Mosiah, on their mission, okay, they convert all these Lamanites, and they became called the Anti-Nephi-Lehites, or the people of Ammon. Do you remember? Now, they took upon themselves this vow. They were disgusted. They'd been a warlike people, and they were disgusted with their previous warlike behavior. So they made a vow of being conscientious objectors. They vowed. They buried their weapons. They were never going to fight again. And you remember what happened? The Lamanites attacked them. They absolutely refused to fight. They laid down, and many of them were killed. So the Lamanites waded into this group of their fellow Lamanites, started killing some, and got halfway in and said they were so disgusted, so frustrated, so angry at themselves, and that they decided that this was all the Nephites' fault. And they were so angry that they were going to take it out on the Nephites. So it was at that time they summoned a great army at that very time. They got the army. This time they chose to go, this is from the land of Nephi, they chose to go down to the coast, along the narrow coastal plain, angry as you can get. They were so angry. They went across the coastal plain, went into this northern pass, and they finally came to a Nephite city, and they destroyed it, absolutely destroyed it. That was the city of Ammonihah, Alma 16. You remember? Where they destroyed that. See, that's how it happened to happen. They probably weren't after Ammonihah for any particular reason, but remember what had happened just before? They had persecuted. Remember Alma and Amulek had preached there, and they'd been so cruel, and that became the desolation of Nebor. So it's interesting how the Lord works, isn't it?
Where did they put the Anti-Nephi?
Well, that's another interesting story. Let me just tell you that very briefly. Sister Priest mentions, and I can probably show that better on the map here. When Alma brought the people of Ammon up north, they put them in an area called the land of Jershon. Okay, the land of Jershon is up in this area here. That's where they settled. But then they found out there was a problem living up there. Because they were right in the way when the Lamanites were always fighting in this area. And so these people who wouldn't take up weapons to defend themselves, their sons did, you remember, the 2,000 stripling work. But they wouldn't take up weapons to defend themselves. So that the Nephites decided, let's put them in a safer place. What place could we put them that wouldn't be attacked? And it's very interesting where they put them. They put them in a city called Melek. Now, let me show you where Melek is and why it would be safe. Here is the river. Here is the city of Zarahemla. Melek is tucked away right here. It's safe from this coastal plain because there's a high group of mountains here, and it's sort of under the protectorate of Zarahemla. They were never attacked there. It was a much safer place. So you can see where Melek is on your map there. Okay. That looks good. Okay. Well, that's enough, I think. Riverside, and we talked about that.
Are you selling maps after the...
I don't have any of fixed fees. Let's see if there's anything else. I think we're... Oh, let me tell you one other story. Let me just tell you one other story that's useful in understanding. It's useful in understanding. At one point, a group of Lamanites was trying to escape the land of Zarahemla and get up to the land northward. Now, the Nephites, there was the Nephite Moroni was the general, the captain, the chief captain, but his henchman was a man named Teancum. Teancum didn't want them to escape. For some reason, they did not want them to get away. They didn't want them to go to the land northward, maybe because they thought they'd be surrounded or something. I don't know why. But anyway, he wanted to prevent them. So he went to an area called the Narrow Pass. Now, when we read Elder Brundage, when Elder Brundage read the story of the Narrow Pass, he thought that was the same as the narrow neck of land. And yeah. Would you see me after? So did I. See, that, I mean, I know what you thought intuitively because it's the same thing I thought intuitively. We all read this narrow passage. We think that's the same as the narrow neck of Lamb. Let's stop and think just for a minute. Where, if this, by the way, this is 120 miles, 110 miles, 120 miles. But if you have 120 miles, where are you going to go on there that prevents them from getting across? I mean, the narrow path, how can a single man's army, the Tiancum and his forces, prevent them from getting north? Well, the answer may lie in the actual map here. There is in this area, by the way, this area, this is all mountains up here, so you wouldn't want to try to cross over here. In this area, it's a very wet land, and in the rainy season, it fills up. There's marshes and so on, so that's almost all water. And there's only one way to get from here to here, and it is there is a raised sandstone area that where the highway is today. It's about 2 miles wide, and it's a raised area. And when you get in the rainy season, on either side of this, you're surrounded by water, and it's the only way to access the land of desolation from the land of Zarahemla. So the narrow pass, you see, may be very different than the narrow neck of land. See? Okay. Well, thank you, by the way, for holding note. And if you want to take a look at this before you read, please do. Well, listen, that's all basically I want to say. Let me just conclude by telling you that the danger of getting too involved in the Book of Mormon is you get interested in things like Book of Mormon geography, which is unsacred. Just get, yes, other sorts.
Moroni, according to this map, he walked for many days before to put the plate under. Because the plate was not found, according to that man, was not found in near.
Right. That's right. That's what we said. In other words, the question, see, the plates were found in Western New York. So here's the map. Here's the map. And here's where the plates were found. See? In North America. You know, way up here. So how did they get? Well, we don't know. I mean, I guess the Lord could have moved him up there. Moroni may have wandered up there. And I pointed out that there is a history of one man that it recorded the history of a man walking at that distance. So, I mean, he could have, I guess.
And he brings only two
sets of plates.
So the other plates.
They all remained in the Hill Cumorah. They were all buried in the Hill Cumorah, and he didn't carry those around. He couldn't have carried those around. There must have been sets of plates. Volumes of plates.
So now these plates are.
We don't know. We never found. We don't know where they are. So, and by the way, let me just tell you this. Let me tell you one of the great reasons to get to the celestial kingdom.
Just
is there going to be some firesides? For example, a week from Sunday evening at 7 p.m., Moroni is going to talk about what he did between 400 A.D. and 421. I mean, we are going to hear some firesides that are going to be so much fun. it will be fun to answer all these questions eventually. But let me just leave you with my testimony of the Book of Mormon. I love the Book of Mormon. I just to me it's formed a, it's so important to me. And Sister Priest will corroborate this. I think it has been a very, very important part of my life. I love it. I'm still very much a student of it. I still learning new things all the time about it, but it's just a lot of fun. And all I have done really is succeed in little more than forming a pretty sticky platform for myself, to the point where whenever I learn anything about the Book of Mormon, it's absolutely fascinating. Because I have a little fundamental knowledge now, nothing sophisticated, a little basic knowledge. But now, you see, when I learn things, it's so much fun. Because I know where to put them. They stick to things that I already know. And it's just a lot of fun. And I hope that you'll do that someday. I have a testimony of the divinity of the Book of Mormon. I know that it is a book that is saved to come forth to our generation. The purpose of the Book of Mormon was not to preach to the Lamanites, was not to preach to the Nephites. It wasn't to preach to anybody but our generation today. This dispensation, that's the purpose of the Book of Mormon. It's a very, very powerful tool. It was intended by God that it be one of the great tools of the final dispensation, one of the great evidences, you see. In fact, the Book of Mormon is regarded by the Lord as an evidence that he places on the earth, and he holds people responsible. He says, look, I have put this great witness there. And if you reject it, if you don't find it, if you don't, you know, if you don't accept it, that's going to be to your detriment. That's how important the Book of Mormon is. And I believe that with all my heart. I leave that with you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.